You're a bad dog. You make me really sad, dog. You make me really mad, dog. I might seduce your dad, dog. You're a bad dog.
All right.
I haven't been on one in a while, but this is kind of the opening. Every time is technical difficulties for the first 5 minutes, and then we launch.
It's almost something. It's almost become a bit like it's a part of our routine, and people expect it to have this mass confusion. Biscuit is high as fuck, as you can see.
Oh, she does look a little out of it.
Yeah, she had a little Delta 8 this morning. And
stop getting your dog high. God.
Does she look like she's suffering?
I don't know what's going on in her head, but it's not good.
I feel like it's the best she's ever felt. Because she's in dog years, she's my age. Like we're seeing the twilight of our lives.
Doesn't look like a very soothing wob either.
Guys, Delta 8 is not THC. I mean, the state of Texas has declared it legal, so it has to be fine. And as usual, I test all of my new drugs on my dog first. It looks like she's in a state that I would like to be in.
Out of it?
Yeah, catatonic.
is that a different state? Broomsh.
Is that, man, that was harsh, man. You roasted me. But but yes, to answer your question, Sarah.
But yes.
Yes, that is the state I would like to be in. Catatonic. I mean, don't we all? We don't want to die.
Definitely not.
But we also don't want to live. We want to be catatonic.
I feel like this is a
personal.
I know. I'm seeing my shrink tomorrow. I feel like I'm starting. I'm preparing for my talk to my psychiatrist by talking to you guys first. I'm trying out some things on you.
You're testing your therapy material?
I mean, yes.
Not a stand-up routine.
Yeah, he's got to get his tight five. I mean,
it kind of is. I mean, you have to prepare for these things so that they don't think you're crazy, crazy, but enough crazy to give you the meds. It's a real fine line. You gotta, all the world's a stage, Sarah. All right, Biscuit. Yeah, we'll talk later. Jesus. I just two drops in her food at eight this morning.
She's a dog.
Yeah, this is all a joke. This is not real.
She's 80 pounds. Yeah, this is a joke. She's just been sleepy. We just got done with a 60 hour drive. And so maybe she's just anyway, Hannah, how the hell are you?
I'm good. I'm good.
So Hannah Krueger is she's been with us for a couple of years, but she's never appeared on the podcast yet. And so I want to say congratulations, from going from writing articles that 10,000 people read a day to appearing on a podcast that a good 500 listen to. So it's a big
privilege, yeah, and an honor.
Right. And anyway, this is long form podcasting. A lot of it gets edited out.
Supposedly. But,
come on, Sarah. All right. So a lot of wine and spirits news this week. Sarah and Hannah, your article yesterday about selling and merchandising RTDs. First of all, the industry is still trying to define these new segments.
And it's like, it gave me a, reminiscent. It's like craft all over again.
Right.
Where they're like, what even is craft? And everybody's got their own definition, and you know, segments it however they see fit, and it makes things more confusing, I think, when you operate together.
Exactly. And, you know, I remember when Smirnoff Ice first came out and Diageo wanted to categorize these as PABs, progressive alcohol beverage. And of course, nobody called them PABs except for employees of Diageo. And right, you know, now we have, I think kind of the industry parlance is leaning toward RTDs being canned cocktails, and the beer guys are very against that. I'm not even sure why, but they want to call them canned cocktails and everybody else calls them RTDs. And I kind of feel like the horse is out of the barn. And, you know,
I think so. I think RTD to me is a catch-all phrase. I mean, okay, they're like anything that is not considered a traditional beer, wine, or spirit. They've kind of like, and it's in a smaller format than it's, well, actually not even that's true actually. Cause it can also be in those large format bottles. So it's a catch-all. Like there's definitely not a,
Well, I kind of think that Debbie Wang at Breakthrough Beverage, she's the group director of analytics and insights, which by the way, is like these distributors are leaning heavily into data. The wine and spirits guys, the big guys. But I like her definitions. Wine is cocktails, typically higher priced compared to FMBs, like a margarita or rum and coke in a can. And then you have FMBs, which are malt-based, coolers, malt-based cocktails. And then you have seltzers, which are spritzer, seltzers, sparkling water, or whatever. And I saw a funny tweet today from the guy at Rabobank who's like, Rabobank. Biscuit has no opinion apparently on this. Biscuit, is it Rabobank or Robobank? We'll wait. All right. He said that like if a seltzer is a beer and an FMB is a beer, and all, you know, Mountain Dew is a beer, is there anything that's not a beer? And I tweeted him back and I said, no, you're right. Everything is a beer because water is just beer before barley and hops have been added. And then Fanta could be a beer because Fanta is water with orange deliciousness added. So everything is beer. Now that we've wasted that time talking about that, I don't think that this is going to be a big play on premise.
I mean, at least in the short term, definitely it is. As people, you know, their points are people, they don't have labor. Bars and restaurants, what's the easiest thing to do? Give them a can that's already made or pour out of a bottle that's already made. And then to go also still, that's, you know, same thing. You can just hand it off and you're not, I don't know, wasting any time or extra time or resources. And while that's still pretty popular, which I think it'll still be for a little while, I think there's definitely that spot for RTDs. I think in the long run, though, it's more like the hotel mini bar play or like golf course. You know what I mean? It'll probably still have like a bit of a place on premise, but maybe not as much as we move kind of past that, only wanting, you know, to go. Right now.
Right. That does make sense.
And I think seltzers and RTDs, those are all kind of pre-game drinks in my mind. It's not something you really like get once you go out. And those don't really match with food all that well either. Like if I'm gonna have a burger or any sort of like filling food, I'm gonna get a beer, or if you're having a nice dinner, then it's gonna be a wine or a cocktail. You're not going to get a nice meal and wash it down with a black cherry seltzer.
Speak for yourself, Jordan.
No, I agree.
You know, speaking of seltzers, they just, I know it's tough comps, but they just cratered into negative territory and, you know, in mid-August. Is that just a function of demand that there's seltzer fatigue? I mean, and I direct that to you, Hannah, as the youngest person here at what are you seeing out there? It's just kind of people like moving on or what?
No, I think everybody that my age that I talk to is still drinking seltzers, and they're maybe not drinking all the same type of seltzer, but in general, like it seems to be like one of the more common things that they do buy. I don't know if it's just because is seltzer just hitting like really tough comps, and you know, it's like they can't keep skyrocketing like that indefinitely, you know? So
that's true.
And I think
they found the ceiling.
Well, the other problem with it is I don't know if we've ever seen a segment like this in scans where it's not brands as much as it is just a bunch of SKUs. And so you're looking at all these SKUs, and the old ones are the ones that are just bleeding share, but they still, the new SKUs, they're the ones gaining all the share. So you just see, I think you zoom in on some of the older ones and see that they're losing all the share. And that's really the problem, is there's just been so much innovation. The cycle has been, you know, pretty vicious. And the old ones were the biggest ones. I mean, White Claw Variety Pack, number one last year, was almost the number 10 brand in all of beer. And now that's the oldest innovation that White Claw has.
And what's the one that you love, Jordan? The one that you have your horse behind?
Oh, God. I just said that White Claw Variety Pack number 3 was going to be the biggest innovation in seltzer this year.
I just wanted you to repeat it.
Yeah.
So that,
which it so is.
I want you to be on record. And yeah, and I think you're going to be right. That's all. So fighting for more cold box space, where is the retail space going to come from to accommodate all these new cocktails and RTDs? You quoted somebody saying it's going to come from beer. It has to. There's no other. I mean, that they have the most space in the cold box, and these things are, they do need to be served or, you know, sold cold. So it's a kind of a wake up call for beer companies, right?
I don't think so. I mean, a lot of these beer companies are the ones pushing these seltzers. So they just kind of have to pick their bet on what they think is going to respond well with consumers.
Right.
That's probably where the outlet, you know, expanding the number of outlets kind of comes into for the spirit-based ones. Because, you know, then obviously...
And that's what I was talking about, spirit-based. We're not talking about malt-based seltzers right now. We're spirit-based. And spirit, when I say in like High Noon is considered a seltzer, according to Debbie, you know, and even though it's spirit based. And
according to them also, they call it a seltzer.
Right. And so let's work with their definition for the time being. So I'm talking about spirit based, like canned cocktails, not like High Noon, but more like, Crown Royal in a can. These type products have never been in the cold box before. And you know, like they said, in Michigan alone, they're going to add 10,000 accounts. And they're like, we don't know how we're going to service 10,000 accounts overnight. Right. You know, and I was like, I know a way you could do it overnight if that's what you want to do. And that's for the wine and spirits guys to contract with beer wholesalers. I mean, AB could literally tomorrow say, we have a new product. It's coming in your warehouse tomorrow. We want it in every account the next day. And it would happen. The wine and spirits guys don't have that capability. And so they're used to slower. Plus they pick by the, there's a lot of reasons why. In other words, I'm all of this blur lines that everybody keeps talking about. Really, I think we're going to see a lot more hybrid situations where wine and spirits wholesalers and beer wholesalers are working together, splitting up a market by channel. You know, we'll take the C stores and the grocery stores. You take the bars and liquor stores or whatever it is, depending on the laws in that state. You know, Texas is weird. We're a four-tier state. You know, we're you've got liquor stores delivering to bars. It's crazy. Every state's wacko. But state by state, I just think I'll see people working together. Mark my words. When it doesn't happen, you can call me out.
Well, I think that definitely seems beneficial for beer wholesalers, but I don't know what the wine spirits wholesalers have to gain out of that.
Well, what they have to gain, Jordan, is not having to buy 50 trucks and hire 800 people overnight. Because, you know, they just can't, they don't have, you know, you've seen liquor trucks around town. You know, they're all, you know, Bobcat type. They're backloaders, you know, whereas beer trucks are side loaders. And do you kind of get the difference? A backloader, you have to climb into the back of the truck and pull out the pallet of that order for that 7-Eleven, let's say. And if it's behind another pallet, how do you get to it? You can't.
Yeah.
On a side loader, which is what the beer companies use, every order is in a separate bay in the side loader. So you just open that side loader. And so in other words, if you get your route mixed up where you go to an account and it's not open yet, or they don't have cash, or they don't have the check, or the owner isn't there, blah, blah, blah. You just go to, in a beer company, just go to the next account. And it's a wine and spirits company can't. You have to stay there because you can't get, you have to unload that product before you can get to the next one. You know, these are the little details I think that people don't get when, you know, the analyst at Rabobank, whatever they're called, they don't, these are type of things that a lot logistics that you have to understand. This stuff doesn't magically appear in the cold box. And the other thing is that rotating a cold box is just a lot different than just sticking wine on a shelf and letting it sit. It has to be refilled and refilled and refilled and refilled, especially on a Friday at night. Wine and spirits distributors don't work. They're not in the HEB on a Friday night. The beer companies are. Fill in the box, fill in the box, fill in the box. Because there's not much space there. The cold box is very limited. You can't just throw up a big display and leave. So, you know, these are the types of things that I think are going to be really important when these spirit companies with their cocktails in a can, RTDs, how are we going to merchandise it? How are we going to get it where it needs to be? This is a cold product, and cold products are something that those guys aren't used to, and they turn a lot faster because, like I said, there's just not a lot of inventory on the shelf. So especially in the C store, I mean, it's just constant. You think the C store owner is going to go fill the shelf? I mean, no, sometimes they do. Right, Biscuit. That's why I went off on a little rant. Was there anything else that we had?
I think the two things you wanted to talk about, I don't think we've talked about at all.
What were the other two things?
The news you tried to combine at the beginning.
Aren't DC expanding into new control states and then breakthrough getting into CBD?
Oh. Okay, I don't want to talk about breakthrough getting into CBD because that's fine.
Okay.
The other thing on the control states, that, I mean, Sarah, correct me if I'm wrong, but that's R&DC telling their suppliers, we can be like Southern. Southern's already in all the control states, right?
And I mean, that bumped them up to 37 markets plus DC. And that's now they're just a few behind Southern, which is at 44, like US markets.
Right. So they're, and when I say they're going into control states, they're putting brokers in there. It's not like they have this big, it's not like opening a huge distribution center in these states. They're building a sales staff and brokering into control states, which is very different from, you know, creating a warehouse and distribution center and all of that stuff. I mean, and so, but like they said, you know, we're putting it in there hoping that in a few years it'll pay for itself because we'll have a full-fledged operation in these states. The whole control state thing is weird. To me, it's like, hey, Southern, we're knocking at your door. We're going to be a national solution for beverage alcohol producers or CBD producers to come to us and say, we want a national solution. And that includes the 17 control jurisdictions, including what's the county in Maryland? Montgomery County, yeah. Maryland. So it's like the 17
random counties.
Yeah, it's like 16 control states.
From like one of the smallest states. That's what cracked me up. Like you needed to parcel out this one tiny spot.
It's totally like it totally was some boss hog in Montgomery County back in, you know, back in the 40s or whatever. He's like, you know what? I'm setting up this machine in this county and I'm going to make all this money and we're going to make it a control county. And, you know, Boss Hogg did it. And those Duke boys, they couldn't stop them this time.
Well, that's my theory for most traditions, not the Duke boys, but some guy or, you know, set up and was like, this is how we're going to do it for this very minuscule reason. And everybody just said, okay. And 50 years later kept doing it.
You're totally right. I mean,
it's all Boss Hogg and the Duke boy.
Right. Life, you know, just like every beverage is beer, all laws and regulations are from Boss Hogg. And those Duke boys, boy, they would cause havoc. And that Cooter, he was funny. Cooter or Scooter. And then don't get me started on that Daisy Duke. Just a fine young lady. And Roscoe, just a perfect inept. I wish all of our sheriffs were inept like that. I would have stayed out of jail a few times. Anyway, I don't know if we want to go there. All right, well. Listen, I wish I could sit here and chat with you guys all day. I don't have any friends, so it's nice to have somebody to talk to.
You're welcome, I guess.
All right, guys. Listen, thank you for drinking spirit-based RTD seltzer pop FMBs. And we'll shout at you next week. Take care. Biscuit, wake up. You live? Biscuit. Okay. All right. I swear that this is a coincidence. She's just a sleepy dog.
Sure.
Yeah. Oh, whatever. All right, guys. Take care.